Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
And it is, and it's like starting the holidays.
I know. So enjoy wine's perfect. And lots of food.
Lots of food, lots of fun, family if you like them, which I hope you do.
You can always make your own family.
You can, yes. Well, I like that a lot.
I think that's the best part of things like Thanksgiving, actually, is that you can absolutely make your own
have
family.
Friend groups and do that. I know. Well, we're doing a fun tradition that we've been doing for, gosh, maybe like 5 or 6 years now, ever since we moved into our new office space, which is on a vineyard, and we're now essentially in a house. So we have a full kitchen, which is exciting, at our office.
You do.
And so we do a whole like team staff Thanksgiving. So we're doing that on Wednesday. So for better or for worse, we've all divided up what we're cooking. And so there should be a full turkey, potatoes, maybe a vegetable. There wasn't a lot of like voting for vegetables, but certainly some pie, charcuterie to start. And everyone on our team brings their spouse, partner, kids, kind of whatever. It's a big, just kind of a chance for our team to get together and celebrate and have a moment before the real craziness of the holiday. So we do it, you know, the week before Thanksgiving. But
and so what did you sign up for?
So my specialty, because we've probably talked about, I do not cook, really. So I do a crock pot mashed potato because it's really hard to screw up.
Do you use potato buds?
I use real potatoes. Thank you. Real butter. There's some real sour cream in there supporting the dairy industry.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And the best part is I always feel like the worst thing about mashed potatoes is they get cold so fast. So if you do them in the crock pot, they stand warm.
That is very true.
They are warm till the moment they hit your plate. So it's kind of like a built-in, like, can't fail, which I like. And I can make them essentially, like, in advance, and they just cook all day. So
I think it sounds incredibly delicious.
So look
delicious.
It up. I think it's like a Betty Crocker recipe, throwback from my days at General Mills or something. But it's delicious. So,
okay.
And easy. Yeah.
Do you think that is anybody going to make something that has marshmallows on top? Please
say
no.
No, I will give a shout out to Valerie Pierce, who used to be on our team, and her deal was she would make the turkey, but then she got to bring like her grandmother's like green Jello recipe that had really really random stuff, including marshmallows in it. So we kind of were all we would accept the green Jello because we didn't have to eat it. But
Did it have vegetables in it?
Oh yeah, no, it was.
Oh,
I don't even know.
Vegetables and marshmallow.
I don't even know. Sorry, Valerie. I don't even know. She loved it, and she'd always be like, "I don't care, more for me. I love it." But that was like her cost of entry to bring that was to make the turkey, which she did a fabulous job of. So,
well, that's always our strategy with the wine. It's like, okay, what do we want to drink?
Yes.
And we keep that in a special corner
for
us. And then we have the other wines
that's out on the table
for the people who don't really care. Yeah. They just want full glasses like that we spread around.
So you and Lawrence are like basically drinking out of your closet.
Uh-huh.
Like you're in hey, you coming back for a refill?
We don't have to
We're
go
in the closet.
Into the closet, but we are very sneaky about it. We're like, oh, well, we'll just keep these in the kitchen where we're cooking and help ourselves. And here's plenty of wine for everybody else.
So funny. So does Miles come home?
He does.
Yeah. So he comes back from Cal Poly for the week.
My college kid will come back for Thanksgiving, yes, for a week.
Yeah.
And probably sleep 98% of the time that he's home.
And maybe eat the rest of the time.
And he should. Yes. Eat, go out, see friends, drive back.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, we are super thankful this weekend because we just came off of a great week with our partners with Landry's and the Rockets. So we were down in Houston. We kicked off our first activation before the Houston Rockets basketball game last Wednesday. So we had 6 winery partners. We were kind of shaking up the winemaker pop-up dinner before a game, and instead we're doing like a sip and stroll.
Okay.
So heavily like heavy apps paired with wine partners and 100-plus guests kind of roaming around pre-game, getting to experience Sonoma County wine and some great bites from the concessionary there. And then activated at the Lexus launch on Friday night. And today, happening at Kima Boardwalk, right outside of Houston, we have 24 Sonoma County winery partners there in partnership with Landry's doing a big consumer wine festival. So thank you, Landry's and Rockets, for great partnership and great opportunity to showcase Sonoma County and our wineries and our growers.
And Houston's the place to be, clearly, for wine.
For wine, huge consumers of wine. They love Sonoma County wine. And, you know, and it's still not cold down there, so it's decent weather.
So 100 guests, how many wines do you bring?
We bring 6 winery partners, and they each pour two wines. So there'll be 12 different wines that friends can check out roaming around. So, and okay. that they had. Yeah.
But how many bottles?
Well, that's a good question. So it's interesting. The Rockets actually buy all the wine. So what they bring in, they sort of over-index bringing in cases of wine. And then if it doesn't get consumed because the wine consumers there are maybe being lightweights or they're holding out for the game, then those wines will get showcased in some of the suites
yeah.
and in some of the restaurants and concessions around the Toyota Center. So
it gets enjoyed.
Yes. I don't know what the final count was, but I know there was a lot of happy consumers and they were excited to cheer on the team.
Okay.
From there. So.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and introduce our guest on The Good Stuff. We are here on The Good Stuff today in studio with our guest, Eric Miller from Kokomo and Breaking Bread Winery. That's hard to say fast. Breaking Bread Winery. I'm trying not to say Breaking Bad Winery.
I know.
Which, maybe was an intent of yours. I don't know. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you for having me. Always good to be here.
Well,
Breaking Bread, people tend to slip and say Breaking Bad or somehow put that in there. And I'm like, come on, Breaking Bread. That's the most
that's
potent
been around
thing
longer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to the old school because you grew up in Indiana. You went to Purdue. You mentioned that a little bit when you came in. But what drew you? I mean, you came to Sonoma County, my understanding is 2003. So you've been here a little while. But what brought you here?
I came a little earlier than that, 2001, but my first harvest was 2003. So I tell people what brought me to California was bluer skies and greener pastures.
Here. As a fellow Midwesterner, what's not to love?
Yeah. Kind of quality of life thing. And I really didn't come out here to make wine necessarily, right? So, but I'd come out when I was in college on a spring break, checked out Sonoma County and was like, I'm moving there. And so I, kept that in my mind, and it took me a year or two after graduating college. I think I might have been waiting on my girlfriend at the time to graduate, and we headed out, and she took a job at Belvedere Winery assistant tasting room manager, and I took a job with my business degree doing finance and wearing a suit and tie in downtown Santa Rosa.
Whoa, fun. Fancy.
Yeah. Can you imagine me like that?
I know.
Right?
He's in full hoodie and baseball hat today just
you,
for the...
You still own
I don't,
tie?
You know, every once in a while I have to break that out, but it's not too often. And I realized quickly, that was... And it's not so much the suit and tie, but it was like, I can't sit at a desk.
No.
I'm not a computer, sit at a desk. As a matter of fact, at the winery, I have no desk.
Really?
And I kind of pride myself. I'm a little in the cellar, a little in the office, a little in the tasting room. And
do you consider your truck your desk?
No, I'm in a Subaru, but I don't know. I mean, I just, I'm always on my feet walking around and, so I just.
Do you have a laptop or do you do everything by phone?
I'm pretty phone centric, but
So you don't need a desk to put your laptop on.
Well, I have to have like a basket, right? For people to go like, Eric's got mail or something. So
basket.
I keep
I
a basket
that.
At my wife's desk.
Is that the basket that the bread is in before you break it?
There we go.
Do you see what I did there?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
But wait. We need to take a couple steps back. So your girlfriend at the time gets a job in a tasting room. You move out here. Were you into wine? Was she into wine?
So she was into wine, got me into wine. She worked in a wine shop in college. And before we moved, I asked her to marry me. So I have to say she was actually my fiance.
Oh.
And so there's
that
love
wasn't part
in
of
this
the first
story
CD.
And
we
all
like
kinds
that.
Of stuff. So no, so she came home one day from work and she was like, hey, we're hiring harvest interns at the winery. And put that bug in my ear. And I was like, I'm not completely stoked with what I'm doing. This isn't exactly me. And I was like, that could be cool. Like, it's a 2-month position and, paid all of, $12 an hour at the time. This is in 2003. And, but I decided, I'm going to go for that and try that out. And when I got there, the winemaker and I kind of hit it off and he put me with the cellar master. So I had this really cool opportunity to work with the head guy, doing all the inoculations and so on. So I worked at that harvest, and this was Belvedere. So this was a pretty big, at that time, the winery's no longer around, but at that time I think they were making, I don't know, 60,000 cases. So
yeah. So explain a little bit about Belvedere, because they are a known, you know, a historical brand, but they were West Dry Creek Road, is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Flowers is currently in the building.
That's what
that,
I
that they, okay, were, yeah. They were in there. And yeah, they were kind of, you know, early with Chardonnay and Pinot, and they did a couple other, they did a big distribution thing called Just Red, and... Mm. It was cool. We made a lot of different varietals. Bill Hembrick owned it, and he had, you know, the Grist Vineyard. So we were making Syrah from there and Bradford Mountain and Zinfandel and stuff. So it was cool. It was a really eye-opening experience. I have to say, like, after harvest, I thought I could make wine, right? Because I was, like, doing inoculations. And, you know, it's funny when you're young like that. You're like, I could take a grape and turn it into wine.
Yeah.
And you learn quickly that there's a lot of other nuances.
Who was the winemaker at the time, or who were some of the people that kind of were there that you got
you
some
know,
mentoring?
So I guess I have to go into the story a bit.
Yeah, let's
so,
do it.
You know, the winemaker was a great guy, like I said. So he was, you know, fellow deadhead, and we liked the same music and stuff. And it
oh,
was,
rest in peace, Phil Lesh.
I know.
Right, I know, yeah. Rest in peace, Phil. So, but he was a cool dude and ended up, you know, like I said, giving me a great opportunity. I worked with him in the morning. I would go into his desk, you know, and talk about what we were going to do and so on. And we became buds. The last day of harvest, I have to say that we were about to come to, you know, blows. It was a little rough.
Wow.
And
uh-oh.
That fiance of mine and him ended up having feelings for each other.
Oh,
so,
wow.
What?
So
this
then,
was this,
I know,
no,
good drama in the
wow.
morning, right?
Was this so, fisticuffs? Like, did you?
This, no, we, you know, it was, I just said, hey, you know, this is whatever. I was young. I was in my 20s. And they didn't even last but a couple months. But it was good. It was good for me. I tell that story now because it's, as I look back, it's a huge part of my story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it's like how you got there and also how you got here.
I found the love.
Yeah,
I lost the love,
yeah.
You know, and then maybe had a chip on my shoulder of going like, okay. But anyway, after that harvest, I was determined to stay in the industry. I was like, oh, I really love the agriculture and the winemaking. So I just said, you know, like any other person, well, what do you do to become a winemaker? You enroll in Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, you know, and I had a bachelor's degree of science, but I did not have all these prerequisites that I needed. So I found myself at the JC taking chemistry classes so I could get into the program there.
Wow.
And then harvest comes for the next year, and I'm enrolled, and I was like, wow, I should really, you know, not miss a harvest. I realized at that time, like, you really learn to make wine by making wine.
Yeah.
You know, as much as you...
There's textbook, but then there's the actual doing.
And I think it's really important to know the chemistry and to know the textbook side of things. But right about, I don't know, it was not far before harvest, because 2004 was a hot year. So, excuse me, harvest started a little early. I went up to a guy who I'd bought his wine before, and I liked his wine, and he was a quirky dude, and I was like, you know, hey, you know, what about...
So many people come to mind.
I know, yeah, I was going to say,
quirky
I know,
dude,
right?
Okay.
I mean, it could be almost anyone in this county.
Yeah, that's true.
And so what was cool, and that guy's name was Rick Hutchinson from Amphora Winery, and what was cool is I went from Amphora with all this shiny stainless and, you know, making, like I said, you know, 60, 80,000 cases... we were in a barn on West Dry Creek at Mount's Vineyard, right?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the winemaker there at Belvedere. One of the things he told me at that first harvest was, you know how to make $1 million in the wine industry? You start with $3 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
That's our saying in the wine industry.
Yeah, totally.
It's kind of a joke, but it's not too far from the truth. Then I'm in this barn, and we had no stainless. We had all T-bins and poly tanks and it was funky, but we were making really good wine there, and he got a good name. So I'm working there, and Rich Mounts, who owns this 140-acre vineyard on West Dry Creek, which is absolutely stunning.
He helped hire me 12 years ago.
Did he? Oh, great,
I love
great
Rich.
Family.
Yes,
and they have Mounts Family Winery there now at the same barn, and it's still they've upgraded and have some stainless and stuff, but it's still very
right, and
much.
And David's making the wine, Rich's son.
And, and Rich is a great guy. And I, you know, at that time, I guess I was new to the wine industry, and I didn't realize that there could be a possibility that you would grow fruit and it not be sold.
Yeah.
So he was coming to us saying, like, hey, I have, you know, this block of Cabernet that's unsold in 2004. And that was kind of really, as I look back, that was the start of it. And, you know, you got, so that put a bug in my ear. And I remember, you know, I sat on that for a couple of days and I came back one day to work and talked to Rich and said, you know, what's up with this cab that you don't have sold? Is it something, you know, that we can make here and this and that? And so, you know, I think it's kind of, that's how I started. I ended up buying that cab and he gave me a good deal on it. And he let me make it there at the winery. So nice. And Rick also obviously helped me, you know. I thought I knew how to make wine. I was doing the punch downs and stuff, right? You know, but I needed a lot of help getting it to bottle and so on. And they were both very supportive. And I think on Rich's end, you know, okay, well, I've sold the fruit now. And Rick also was very supportive as well, as to say, you know, go for it, you know. So anyway, yeah, that's how it started. It wasn't that I had aspirations, and it wasn't even that I was looking to start a winery as much as it was just like an opportunity like that came up. That I, you know, I mean, I guess that's an opportunity, right? Yeah, on sold fruit, but you got to kind of go for certain things and make things happen. So anyway, then I had the tough part of, okay, I'm sitting on these 12 barrels of Cabernet.
Now what?
And now, right. Well, yeah, not even like getting it to bottle, but what the heck am I going to call the thing?
Yeah. Mm.
And I remember someone telling me, you know, early on, like, hey, you have to have a story. You know, there's so many brands out here. You have to have a story. And I'm like, what am I going to call this thing? And, you know, and hanging out friends, it's in barrel, right? So I incorporated and called, you know, my corporation, Eric Miller Wines, Inc. So I had some time to come up with a DBA or what I was going to call the winery. And I couldn't call it Eric Miller Wines because who am I, right? So I had a buddy of mine that is from California, born and raised and whatnot. And I think that made a difference to me at the time where he threw out, hey, what about Kokomo? You know, the name of your hometown. And I was like, oh, man, you don't know my town. Right? My town's very blue collar, and it's nothing that you would name a...
It's nothing glamorous. It's beer country.
Yeah, it's beer country. And it's, yeah, I know. People are like, you sell a lot of wine in Kokomo. I'm like, a little. It's more Indianapolis and stuff, but Kokomo's, you know, but it was a cool name. And then, but also there's this Beach Boy song.
For sure. Yeah, there sure is.
And I don't
know if
that was...
And the movie Cocktail.
Yes, right, you know.
Great movie.
Yes.
So I, without any other really options, I was like, you know what? He put that bug in my ear. Mm. I stewed on that for a long time, and I decided, you know what? I'm gonna go for it. I'm going to just call it Kokomo, and at least I'll have a story, and it'll be, you know, something to start this thing off with. And I look back, and that might have been one of the smartest things that I did.
Were you surprised it wasn't taken?
At that time in 2004, which was 20 years ago, it, you know, because I was, you know, 15,000 winery bonded. And now there's more than double that, right? So at that time, I mean, now I would be surprised, and I still think that I have, you know, you got to protect your trademark the best you can. But, I don't know. It wasn't taken, though, so that was great, and... I know, like from a brewery in Kokomo or something.
Yeah, or something. Other business that would have, you know, an issue with it or be confusing or something like that. But it gave you the story of like where you're from. And
you know, not only, Virginia, did it give me a story, what it gave me as I look back on it, probably even more important, was a natural market.
Yeah.
Because I went back to Indiana and I sold that entire 12 barrel lot in my home state.
Wow.
So I had a plan at release, and I had a buddy who was the wine buyer at multiple wine shops in Indianapolis, and so he really supported me and case stacked me, and we had this little funky case stacker with my picture with my dog in the vineyard, you know, and it wasn't done up like a nice printed one, you know, but it gave the brand that authenticity, you know. So and still Indiana's a big, you know, great market for us, particularly DTC, direct to consumer, but also now I make a wine with Purdue, my alma mater, and we call it the Boilermaker Blend and the Boilermaker Blanc, and it's taken a cool little path of its own.
Yeah,
going back to the synergy with sports, right? Wine and sports. Yeah.
No, and I think I mean, what a great connection. Like you said, it's so, especially now, so hard to kind of break into the market. So to have this natural connection back to your roots in your hometown and have people appreciate that and maybe support. Has the name, and then they stay for the quality and the love, and you know, It's nice.
They're proud of you.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You know, you're like a local boy gone done
yeah,
well,
they're so
right?
proud.
Yeah, yeah, for me, I was really surprised to have my partner, Randy Peters, decide to join on because he's a fourth-generation Dry Creek farmer with a brand named after my hometown. So I thought that was pretty cool of him. And yeah, so anyway, but it's been a lot of fun.
I know. We need to dive more into that relationship.
Yeah, that's an important one.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things missing. So we need to get from, okay, so you choose the name to all the things that you're doing now, and we do have to take a quick break very soon. But yeah, so we'll talk about all that when we come back on The Good Stuff. Stuff with our guest Eric Miller of Kokomo Winery and Breaking Bread Winery, but we'll get to that because we really need to kind of get to
fill in the gaps.
I know we need to fill in a few gaps before we talk about Breaking Bread. Well, you know, I mean, some really good stories there. But here you are. You got 12 barrels of cab. You come up with the name, which has done very well for you. But where do you get to the point of starting your actual own winery? All in.
Yeah, that came 2006 after harvest, and the winery I was working at there, the guy was like, "You've gotten too big. You need to find something else."
So you got kicked out of the nest.
I got the big. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was okay, you know. And so, you know, that's how things work. And of course, when that stuff happens, you're always like, "Oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?" So the first thing I did is I went to Santa Rosa to the warehouse district there, all of those are. Yeah. And I was like,
"Called that the wine ghetto."
Yes, right. And, but it,
in the nicest way.
Yes.
Good facility, other wineries, and you know, I had to keep the thing going, right? So I talked to somebody and I got, you know, maybe a form to lease it. And I was like, okay, I think they're going to lease it to me. Right. And it's always tough when you hadn't been in business too long, you know, to get the bank to look at you or even to get a lease and whatnot. So I was up talking on the property because we had moved from Mount's Vineyard over to Timbercrest in 2004, right after bottling. And I got to know the owner there, the Walton Spills, and also the head viticulturist, Randy Peters. And his brother Dale Peters, and become good friends with him. And I was just kind of telling him, you know, ah, man, you know, I've got to look for something else. And I remember Randy telling me, just don't sign any leases. And I was like, okay, all right. And
that's,
I'm like, but there's not another building that I see up here. So at that point, they told me their plans that they were going to build another building up there, and that would be my building.
Wow.
And so in the meantime, I could do harvest in the 2007 harvest kind of under a pole building and be able to use a building that my neighbor Papa Pietro had for their wine storage to store my barrels because they weren't using all of it. So kind of the community came together for me, I felt like, right? And that was a really cool harvest. I wish I would have had more pictures from that 2007 vintage when we were kind of doing pump overs, looking at the sun setting in Dry Creek Valley, you know, because we're up on that bench and stuff. But so, yeah, that happened. And another thing that happened in 2005 is I started buying fruit from Randy, not only from the estate there at Timbercrest, but Randy has a vineyard out in Sebastopol, Peter's Vineyard, and I bought some Pinot off of him, which was in 2005, you couldn't buy Pinot, right? The movie had come out, and Pinot was just, you know. And so for him to even sell me a couple tons was a really big deal. I knocked it out of the park with that, 2005 Peter's Pinot. And you know, Randy has this great quote, and he still has the same quote that he just kind of takes all the credit, right? Wine's made in the vineyard.
Well,
just don't mess it up, Eric. As we know, there's some truth to that. But
see, I think I know a lot of farmers that say that, actually,
yeah.
Eric.
Like, yes.
A lot of farmers and that might say
and
that.
And there's a lot of truth to that, as you know, being a chef and so on, you know, your ingredients or everything. So anyway, yes, I think his fruit was a big part of that 2005 Pinot, but I got a big score on it. And I got his attention on that one. Yeah. So that was important, too. So at that time, I think I started, you know, and I was probably like bleeding, you know, and needing some capital and stuff. And I was like, hey, you know, why don't you partner up with me on this thing? And Randy doesn't have kids. Randy and his wife, Robin, they've been married 50 years now. But they, you know, he was always a basketball coach in Cloverdale for 30 years. And I'm from Indiana and love basketball, too. But we just hit it off in a lot of ways. And I think, I don't know, maybe he took pity on me or whatever. But he's like, I think I got everything to lose. Why would I want to partner up with you in this winery? But he loved the name Kokomo from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyway, I finally got him to sign on as a partner. And that was just really cool, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But he must have seen something in you early on just even to give you access to those grapes in the first place. Because, you know, I mean, who were you? And you hadn't really made Pinot before. And but so,
yeah,
I mean, he did.
We have
there was
this
something
great
there.
Stereotype being from the Midwest, don't we, Carissa? Uh-huh. Which we are hardworking.
We
people.
Are, yeah. And good work ethic.
Yes, the good work ethic.
Hardy.
And I think that, you know, and they definitely are, like farmers are.
Mm-hmm.
And they would watch me struggle a lot before they would hand me the tool to make it way easier, right?
Like,
and I'd be like 2 hours.
It.
And
you
then
earn
it's
it.
Like, you just sat over there watching me do this and you had that thing to help
yeah.
me. You know, so I think a lot of that and just seeing that I was, you know, very passionate about what I did, but also, you know, very hardworking. And I know that that was the only way into Randy's heart would be a hard worker. So
yeah, for sure. Well, I love because we talk a lot with the multi-generationals, more of the Randy Peters on the show who, you know, fifth generation, sixth generation, fourth generation. But you have such a fantastic entrepreneurial story into wine. And you're talking a little bit off air about, you know, representing, going back to kind of your alma mater and being asked to speak about entrepreneurship. But it really is nice to see that flow that someone, I mean, it doesn't sound like you grew up drinking all these fabulous wines and were like, oh my God, I'm so motivated by wine. I need to get out there. It's just, you kind of just kept making really good decisions and following your passion.
Yes.
Which is super fun.
You know, and the agricultural piece. I did not grow up on a farm in Indiana. Most people are like, oh, well, you probably grew up on a farm there, you know? And so you had the farming
yeah.
piece. But there's something about the agricultural piece that I think I always connected with.
Mm.
And that was really important too. But yeah, you know, I just kept working hard at it. And, you know, and I think I have a unique story on Dry Creek Road, right? You go down Dry Creek Road
yeah,
and
that's true.
It's very generational, which is so rich in history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But mine is... There's no way he named this after Kokomo, Indiana. Or I'll have people from Indiana that come up, you know, that wander up, that don't know, you know, our story and whatnot. But then when they come in, even if they're from other parts of the Midwest, we have a vibe in there that's very down to earth, you know. And I think that, you know, being named after a blue collar town, I couldn't have crystal chandeliers when you come in, right?
Need to fit.
Barnwood and that kind of thing. So people really, I think, enjoy our atmosphere.
So what do you think that's allowed you to do, not having sort of the generational legacy, in meaning that you're not have any sort of, you weren't beholden to this history or story? What has that allowed you to do sort of creatively or take risks on?
Yeah, you know, I think I, you know, even starting my new brand, Breaking Bread, was one of those things where I think a lot of generational farmers were like, oh, this is a new trend in wine and I can't go down that path. It's not going to be taken serious or whatnot. But I embrace that, you know. There's a name of natural wine. I don't like that name. Mm-hmm. I think wine is natural, especially if it's made in a boutique way, because, you know, it's one of the, we don't really need any ingredients, right?
Yeah.
We have native yeast on the grapes and we have glucose fructose and it's, you know.
Off you go.
Off we go, right? And we don't have to add all this stuff. But that was cool for me because it was so different. And I think I think part of the deal was the challenge, you know, of saying, hey, making wine without like, let me try not adding SO2. Let me, and, you know, not only like the natural thing, but I think that it's kind of owed to ancient winemaking, right? Like making ancient sparkling wines like Petnats and making orange wines that are skim fermented whites and making carbonic reds without destemming and doing a lot of stuff like it was done a long, long time ago. And I think that was part of what drew me into the challenge of making wines like that. So,
I heard wine over and over again, and there's two bottles sitting in front of us, so we're probably going to need to open at least one of those.
We are going to get to that perhaps on the next break, but
Me being pushy.
Yeah, right. Wine's too far from Carissa. That's really what that's about. But we will open the wine, and you can talk about, because it'd be good to get you to just sort of tell us, walk us through your portfolio, you know, of the Kokomo wines specifically, but then also the Breaking Bread, because you've mentioned them, but we maybe take a step back and like the origin story for that and when you decided to start that brand, because it's been at least, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah, 2018.
Something like that, 2018? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, interesting.
I know. So much to uncover.
Well, do you want me to get the bottles for you?
Yeah, I'm kind of.
And we've got
at them.
Two, so we have decisions to make.
I know.
Or white and a red.
Do we make no decisions and just, you know?
I know. Well, where the Sauv Blanc is going to be easy because it's a screw cap, so that's like.
Okay.
And then on the red, no capsule. We're doing no capsules.
So, I like that decision.
That wasn't a naked wine coming in. It just is actually capsule free.
Yeah, we decided to make the change. So.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, we are going to take a quick break so we can open these wines and be right back with Eric Miller on The Good Stuff. On The Good Stuff with Eric Miller from Kokomo and Breaking Bread Winery. And Carissa is just about to crack.
Did you hear that?
Crack open. Our first wine, the white wine. So, Eric, what have you brought?
I brought our current release of Sauvignon Blanc, the 2023 vintage. And this is grown at our property at Timbercrest. There on Dry Creek, 120-acre property up on the east bench. Thank you. And I would say, you know, obviously we're famous for Zinfandel and Dry Creek.
Yep.
And I always love to say, and I know I probably get blowback, but we make and grow the best Zin in the world in Dry Creek Valley, right? I love saying
here.
That.
Yeah.
I know my Lodi and Paso people are like, what? But we really believe that.
Well, you're Sonoma County people.
Yeah, we're
fully
here
support
in Sonoma
you,
County.
So.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a cool
Own
thing
it.
To be able to say, and it's a big thing to be able to say.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, in Dry Creek, we're also doing a lot of, you know, we're sandwiched in between Russian River and Alexander Valley, and we're only a mile and a half wide. So it's in a really kind of unique area, and we're experimenting more and more with the varietals that can be planted there. But I have to take my hat off a little bit to Dry Creek Vineyard. They started doing Sauvignon Blanc pretty early in the valley, and now Sauvignon Blanc is probably our second most well-known varietal in Dry Creek. So,
and I love Dry Creek Sauvignon Blancs.
Yeah,
I
mean, nicely
you
done.
Want it cool enough, but not too hot, and I think we're in a really good area for that. So I've been making this since 2008, and what I did uniquely is I started experimenting, I don't know when this was, probably like 2014 or something, with a little bit of Acacia barrels. Had a barrel sales rep come in and was like, hey, this is what the Alsatian producers are using to really respect the aromatic white varietals, and it's not oak. Right, so it doesn't have these big oak flavors of vanilla and caramel and these savory notes, and a little lighter toast. And I went and I started, you know, to make it, you know, I think I was 10% acacia, and then maybe I went to 20, but now we are 100% barrel fermented in acacia barrels. Not new, maybe only 10% new, but what that does is it gives the barrel fermentation a little bit of texture from that.
Yeah, so you get a great mouthfeel.
Yeah, and it allows me to stir the lees.
Yeah.
You know, and when I tried stirring lees on Sauvignon Blanc in tank, it's a very reductive varietal, and you tend to get these kind of skunky aromatics that aren't good. So the barrel allows it to breathe there. And one of the things, you know, after starting Breaking Bread that kind of I got confidence with and so on is Kokomo now is 100% native yeast. And we don't pitch a single yeast for anything we make, you know. So, we press this Sauvignon Blanc and let it sit in barrel till it starts fermenting. Takes about 5 or 6 days from a nice, good cold pick like that. And we stir once a week. But we pick it lean, right? So this is only like 12.5 alcohol.
Wow.
So it's got that really nice acid, and it didn't go through malactic or anything. But it's got texture and a finish. And I really attribute a lot of that to the barrel ferment.
Yeah. Well, I've been a big fan of your Sauv Blancs. I think that's probably the wine that really introduced me to Kokomo. actually. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, I make a lot of stuff.
You do. Virginia. You do. You make a lot.
I used to taste it all.
Yeah. I think we counted 17 varietals that I made this last year for Kokomo. So we're not shy on different varietals.
But I do want to mention that you were very early pioneer in rosé.
Yes, I remember you did an article.
Okay, I really liked that too. Maybe that's the other one too.
Yeah. And I do it the same way with the Acacia Barrel Ferment like that. And so that's Randy's vineyard, Pauline's vineyard, named after his late mother, Pauline. And he's fourth generation, so she was third. Her grandfather came from Italy there to Dry Creek. But yeah, so that's the rosé, and we make, you know, Cab from Alexander Valley, and then of course Peter's Vineyard, our Chardonnay and our Pinot.
Okay, and then breaking bread, what is that, just a red and a white?
You know, I make a lot for breaking bread, too. Okay. Not a lot of varietals, but I probably have like 5 or 6 SKUs. But what's been really interesting is that it's been the Pet Nat, which is an ancient way of making sparkling wine, that I do with Old Vine Zinfandel, which I love. So I really tried to focus Zinfandel on that brand. I thought that Zinfandel needed to kind of have a fresh face, and particularly, you know, that style of brand or that category is a lot of younger drinkers. And I think these younger drinkers really need to embrace Zinfandel. It's one of the coolest grapes. It's so versatile. I make a rosé, dry rosé of Zinfandel for breaking bread. I do a Pet Nat Zinfandel sparkling, and then I do, you know, a carbonic or whole cluster Zinfandel. So cool. But yeah, and I do some Cab Franc and an orange wine. It's become very popular for us as well.
Okay, well, we have to take one last break. We're going to come back and wrap things up with Eric Miller in a second. Good stuff. We've had such a nice time speaking with Eric Miller. It went so fast.
So fast. Like so super fast this time.
So fast. But tell us how people can visit you, what they can experience, where you are.
Okay. Yeah. We love hosting folks at the winery, and I think we're very inviting. We are on Dry Creek Road. I always tell people a mile and a half past the general store if you're heading to the lake, but it's 4791 Dry Creek Road. We have a lot of cool neighbors right up in our little area where we're at there, but we definitely love to host people there. And you can always go to our website, which is kokomowines.com or breakingbreadwines.com. And we do breaking bread tastings at Kokomo as well. I don't have the sign out front or anything, but if anyone's ever interested, we definitely open those wines there as well.
Okay, so we're open daily, 11 to 4, the hours that I have, tasting appointments available at 11 a.m., 12 p.m., 1 p.m., 2 p.m., 3 p.m.
And you can follow them on Instagram at Kokomo Winery and at Breaking Bread Winery.
Absolutely.
So they follow along, see what you're up to.
I do the Instagram, so I should probably do more than I do, but we love people following us there, and I try to do cool reels or whatever I can.
Oh, so that's fun.
Keep all people engaged.
Yeah. I like that.
All right. Well, we're engaged with Tuesday Night Wine.
Tuesday Night Wine. So, you know, we've got to open something good. So I'm going to, thank you, Eric, be enjoying your Kokomo 2022 Cab Franc, which I love Cab Franc. So this is from Dry Creek. And what vineyard is this?
Mizani
Vineyard. Ooh. I love it. Yeah. All right. Well,
Throwing a curveball in there. Well, I'm going to give a shout out to the Sauvignon Blanc that you brought. The 2023 Kokomo Sauvignon Blanc Timbercrest Vineyard from Dry Creek Valley, of course. And now, Eric, you're on the hot seat.
What am I going to have?
I know. What's the winemaker opening?
I've been enjoying this small producer out of Sonoma Valley in his tasting rooms in Sonoma. And it's Extra Dimensional Wine Co.
Hardy Wallace.
This is Hardy Wallace. Hardy Wallace. It was Dirty Rowdy was his first brand. I love his Mulvedra. And it was he was really kind of inspirational for me to start breaking bread, drinking those wines and enjoying those wines. And I think great Tuesday wine, nice and light, and just some beautiful wine. So
Awesome.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to spend some time with him recently, tasting through his lineup.
I've never met him.
Oh. No.
I need to meet the guy.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay, we're going to make that happen.
Yeah.
We'll make that
happen. We started
talking
about love and matchmaking, and we're going to end with Virginie offering to matchmake
with
you.
With love.
And wine. So there you go. Full circle.
Well, thanks again to Eric Miller for joining us today from Kokomo Breaking Bread. And, you know, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, Carissa, remember to drink the good stuff.
Hey, cheers to that.
Cheers. Good times.